Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Hey Scott, I'm doing pretty well. UC is riding a three-game winning streak, having blown out rather comfortably a pretty solid SMU team. And I know you and I were kind of going a little back and forth on just how good or bad this SMU, this particular version of SMU is this year. But coming in, SMU was I think 29th in KenPom. Projected to be into the tournament, not comfortably, but like an 8, 9, 10 seed, kind of depending on what you're looking at. And wire to wire, UC pretty much blew them out. I mean, it was close in the first few segments of the first half. Defense started clamping down. They were up 34-20 at halftime, and then UC just ran away with it in the second half, winning by 20, 76-56. Scott, thoughts on that game? I mean, what? How are you kind of? I guess taking, knowing what we know about this team right now, they're on the three-game winning streak. They're, pretty much rolling through the conference so far. I mean, obviously, I haven't touched Wichita State yet, but I mean, any broader stroke assumptions you can make about this team, kind of given last night's win and, where we're at?
I mean, the number one thing that stands out is like the defense is like an elite. Like that hasn't dropped off at all. And in fact, it seems like they've gotten like better defensively. So everybody's like bought in to play defense. At least like at this point in the season. So that's like really encouraging after the Florida and Xavier games showed like a little bit of rockiness. Like they've doubled down defensively and like nobody can really like touch them. It's gonna take a good offense to beat this team, unless like UC runs up against another like really great defense that can, or at least a great defensive effort like against Temple, where like they can make UC try to score. But even like last night, the first half, UC shoots 28%, but they get to the free throw line 14 times and have a comfortable halftime lead. That's like the defensive effort was just off the charts. And I think some of that speaks to like the composition of this SMU team. But you can't take away anything from what UC did because they're really good and they beat SMU by 20 in that game. Like you said, after like the 12-minute mark was never close.
Yeah, and I think that's what's kind of interesting about the team that we kind of learned about this year. I mean, we knew kind of coming into the season that, you lose a Kevin Johnson, especially, on the wing spot. You lose a Troy Copain, and especially his length out there at point guard. And just the replacement players, bringing in Kane Broome, giving Justin Jennifer more to toe the rock a little more. UC was going to be kind of trading a little defense to get a little offense, which, I'm all for. I think a lot of us are. That's kind of a breath of fresh air. But they were going to give up some stuff defensively. And pretty much since the Xavier game, or I mean, yeah, pretty much the Xavier game, they've been pretty damn stout defensively. Only gave up 66 against Florida, and that's a game in which they turned it over a bazillion times. 50 against Mississippi State, 63 against UCLA on the road, 49 against Arkansas Pine Bluff, 62 against Cleveland State. They thumped Memphis, winning 82-48. They beat Temple 55-53. I mean, you can almost argue that, the last segment of that game was won exclusively on defense. And then they won comfortably against SMU, holding them to 56 points. And it's not only that the defense is as good, if not better, than last season, it seems like. It's doing it against pretty solid competition, and it's traveling as well. Holding UCLA to 63 points is really impressive. Temple, you never really know what you're going to get going into Temple. It was such a weird game anyways, but the fact that they could just flip a switch in the last couple of segments and lock down Temple and climb back in and win that game because of the defense, really, really encouraging as we're looking down the stretch here.
The Temple result kind of didn't look great like right away when Temple just scored like 39 points against UCF. Like Temple, not great, but like Temple like played really hard. Like we knew that game would be tough going to Temple,
Right.
But like, it's kind of weird. Like you said at the beginning, like you see, we thought they would trade some defense for offense, but this year it's been the inverse from last year, where they've traded offense for better defense. Like offensively, this team is worse than they were last year, and their defense is like, went from being really good to being completely elite, and it's really hard to score against them. And if you have a
Right.
team like a Temple or like SMU, where you only have like three guys that can score, like you're screwed if like the Bearcats can put the screws down on them, because like outside of Foster, who had like a it was 4-14, Shake Milton was 5-10, and like SMU, like nobody else was consistent, and like if you have to force everybody else to beat you. Like a lot of these teams just straight up can't do it. Like Temple couldn't do it consistently. SMU couldn't do it consistently. And that just like leaves some interesting games coming down the stretch, because Houston has probably the best scorer in their league in Rob Gray. Like he
Right.
gave UC some trouble last year, although UC like swept them. So like you have to consider that one. And then like UCF, they're also elite defensively, so that's gonna be an interesting game, next Tuesday, and of course like Wichita State just looks really solid too, so it's gonna be really I think it's gonna be more interesting to see where UC's offense comes like down the stretch. So
Right.
we know that like you said, we know the defense is gonna be there game in and game out. At least we hope so, because like the Xavier game did poke some holes, but like they've gone on the road a couple of times, like at UCLA and at Temple, and the defense has been great.
And obviously, like, I mean, Wichita State it's far so far ahead of the schedule. We can't even look at it at this point, but I mean, it is out there. I mean, on March 4th, I mean, that's the last game of the regular season. Both teams could very well be in the top 10. I mean, Wichita State, they score on everything right now. I mean, and that's just how they have always been. So, I mean, you could almost make the argument that between now and March 4th, UC is not really going to face an offense on the road of that caliber. You know, maybe Houston mid-February, maybe SMU. I mean, maybe we'll learn more about those teams by then. But I mean, as of now, it doesn't seem like they're going to be tested on the road until March 4th, at least defensively. And then to your point, I mean, offensively, I don't know what it is. I mean, last night, Kyle Washington, he was 1 of 7 from the field, which. Hate to see that. Jaron Cumberland was 1 of 8. I mean, he just had an awful first half. I mean, they collectively shot 28% from the field in the first half. They looked dead. They still led at halftime. I mean, just because of that defense. So it's like, you know, to your point, they've kind of done a flip-flop of the script this year in improving defensively even more so than they did last year. And the offense has dropped off, and the defense, it seems like, is carrying them so far. It's just very interesting how that's happening. And you hope that Cumberland, you know, continues to find his sea legs and, you know, find some more consistency on that side, and just breaks out of the sophomore slump. Because as soon as he comes alive, then the offense is going to come alive as well. And then, you know, you got the defense and the offense clicking up on all cylinders, and then you've got the last half of the season where you've got the Wichita State game, the Houston game, the SMU game, and then another Wichita State game. We'll see what happens. I mean, at least we know that on night in, night out, we can again rely on the stout defense.
And like the second half offense was a lot better. Like UC went 15-26, and did get to the free throw line 15 more times. So like that, I think that was encouraging. Especially like Gary Clark, they just didn't have an answer for him. And that Cumberland and Washington both went 3 of 5 the second half. And like Evans had a really solid game. Like he's been really kind of inconsistent this season. Like 7 of 14, 18 points, 4 assists, and like no turnovers. Like the team as a whole, like 13 offensive rebounds. Just like a really like solid effort,
Right.
even though like it wasn't like the sexiest offensive game, like they still like were able to like they outscored SMU the second half. Like I put up a 40-point half on them.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, that was almost like the game plan we were kind of thinking about. Like, when we came into the game, we knew SMU's makeup is they play a lot of long guard wing type players at the 1 through 4 spot. So, your guards are going to be, unless you have like a Troy Copain type player, which he's a 1 million type length point guard, they're going to be outsized. And it's extrapolated even more when your starting point guard is a what, 5'9" Justin Jennifer, and Kane Broome isn't much taller than him. So, I mean, it's not especially surprising when you see both of them go 1 for 6 from the field. But, I mean, at the same time, SMU gives up length down low. So Gary Clark gets, 18 points, 6 of 9 shooting. He's a monster on the glass. Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the scouting report coming into this game, and it kind of played out that way. Thank God Gary Clark was getting his numbers, because, I mean, even though Cumberland and Washington did finish the night strong, I mean, they were both 8 of 25 from the field. I mean, Kyle Washington himself only had 9 points. So, yeah, I mean, it all kind of worked out as expected. And I don't know, SMU's kind of that weird team that, they're going to take away your guards, and your forwards have to step up. And, I mean, it was nice that, you had a Gary Clark down low that really took advantage of that and exerted his dominance, both defensively and offensively.
I think it's kind of interesting looking through at Gary Clark's like box scores against SMU. It's like that over his like career, he's had like one big game against SMU almost like every single year, and like then that's it, just only one good game. Like last year, he had 18 points, like almost a similar type performance in the first game against SMU, and then like they were able to take him away in the conference tournament game and the game at Moody.
Right.
Like it's really going to come down to like the game at Moody for SMU. Like if they
Yeah.
can, it's like they're still really good at home. Like their problem is like they like nothing they do travels. Like their offense is like barely top 50 after last night. Their defense is like good. It's like ranked 32nd. But we were talking about before. Like their only like road or neutral win was beating Arizona in the Bahamas. And it's like really hard to get a good grasp on how good SMU is. Like they're good, but I don't know. They don't look like a tournament team to me. Like, do you think? What do you think about SMU?
Yeah, I mean,
Like you were pretty confident going into this game.
well, yeah, because I mean, they were 12-4, but they had wins over USC and Arizona, and they had pretty much got taken care of business at home. I mean, you're right. Their road losses are, I mean, they're not bad. TCU, UC, now, and Tulane. I mean, those aren't bad losses, but you're right. I mean, they're such a Jekyll and Hyde team, home and away. And unfortunately, they've got to run the rotation of UC, Wichita State, and Houston, and Tulsa to an extent. I mean, you almost have to chalk up the Wichita State game as a loss. But I mean, as soon as they lose to Tulsa and Houston on the road, then they're all of a sudden an NIT team, kind of like you were alluding to. I mean, right now they're, the bracketologists haven't updated their stuff yet, but Joe Lunardi has SMU a 9 seed. I mean, they have a few more bad loss. I mean, not bad losses, but road losses in there, and they're going to all of a sudden be a bubble team.
Yeah, they're definitely one now. Like, because especially with the emphasis on like the road or neutral site games, like they just haven't come through. Like this was a pretty terrible week for their like NCAA like hopes, like losing at
Right.
Tulane and then just getting like completely outclassed by UC. Like nobody had really done that to SMU this year, and like they had, did have a double digit loss at TCU. Like UC like just made SMU look like on a completely different like plane, which was really great to see for UC. Is it like
Oh yeah, if you're a UC fan, that was a good game.
especially like with how they like were like really inconsistent against Temple. Like they just came out and just laid waste to Tulane. That's like back-to-back conference home wins where like they haven't even been close, which is a really encouraging sign. It's also kind of weird how they beat SMU and then Memphis by more than they beat terrible Cleveland State. That's how much they did not care about that Cleveland State game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what happens when you run out, walk-ons, 5, 6 minutes, to go in the second half. Yeah, I mean, I think just in conference play, we're kind of learning that UC's a tough beat at home, which, is not a surprise, but the fact that their defense and offense comes alive at the same time, for the most part, at home, is something we've learned. And then on the road, I mean, so far, they've only had one conference road game. I mean, the defense is the thing that's traveling. I mean, the offense is still struggling. But at least they can rely on that on the road. I mean, which is going to be incredibly critical when you have road games, SMU, Houston, and then obviously Wichita State that we talked about earlier. I don't know. For me, it was from an individual standpoint. I mean, it was there. I feel like there's not that many storylines to talk about with this game. I mean, Gary and Jacob Evans got there. They pretty much shouldered most of the load. Cumberland struggled. Kyle Washington was iffy. Justin Jennifer and Kane Broome. I mean, it's hard to take anything away from them because, I mean, they're going to get outlanked there on the perimeter most of the time. I mean, Trey Scott actually had a pretty nice game, which is kind of nice to see. But yeah, it was kind of just like same old from a box score standpoint. I don't know, anything like to take away from just like the individual, I mean, we kind of talk about, broader strokes here, but like anything to take away from just like a player-to-player standpoint or any new changes you noticed from that game?
Number one, I would have Jennifer. Like, he had like a shaky first half. Then the second half, he was like really one of the reasons that why their offense was kicking. They had 4 assists the second half. And
Yeah, that's true.
got to the free throw line 14 times, or not 14 times. He got to the free throw line 4 times, like only 2 of 4. But like seeing him be more involved with the offense, I think was a pretty good sign. Like he had a couple of baskets in the first half. Like he still isn't like take charge that way, but him getting to the foul line and then like him like at least kicking the offense, I think is a pretty good sign. Especially when he played 17 minutes the second half.
Yeah.
Kane Broome, like came back off of his injury, and he didn't really look that great. And like Jennifer really like just took down that, just commanded the point guard position, which is something we've really been waiting for him to do. So I think that's a big time positive.
That's
And
true.
then back Gary Clark, a great performance. And we talked about Evans and Cumberland coming alive the second half. Although with the turnovers still, like 3 turnovers in the second half. Like they have to find some way to like keep him from turning the ball over so much. He had 4 turnovers. Like he and Broop combined for 7 of the 11 turnovers. So it's
Yeah.
good to see like UC curtail the turnovers. At least but outside of those two.
Yeah, they were at least able to get a positive assist to turnover ratio, which was good. So yeah, Cumberland. I don't know what to do with Cumberland. I mean, we're halfway through the season at this point. He's still really shaky game to game. I mean, he's not the consistent scorer, that we saw last year, but I mean, then again, he came off the bench. I mean, would it make sense to, once Broom comes back, have him slide down to the two, and then you have Jennifer and Broom kind of running, rotating the point with Evans, and then having Cumberland come off the bench? Is that like an option now?
I don't know how much of an option it really would be. Just in the sense that they defend much worse when they have Jennifer and Broom on the court. Like
Yeah.
Cumberland defends pretty well.
Yeah, he's a better defender. I mean that so yeah, okay. If we're talking in the broader schemes of like, this team overall being a better defensive team than it was last year and a worse offensive team, like Cumberland is like the poster child for that because his offense has just dropped off so much this past season. Just, I mean, I don't know what it is. I mean, he still seems to be kind of had that. He still has that kind of like driving and shooting mentality they had last year, but just nothing's falling. But his defense has taken a huge step up this season. Like he's no longer a liability defensively, which is great to see. So I guess, yeah, to that point, I mean, yeah, they're going to get exposed if they go with the smaller kind of 1-2 guard lineup. I was just kind of curious. I mean, I didn't know if it made more sense for Cumberland to just start the game on the bench. I mean, he could still get his 20 to 30, but he could just be kind of that lightning, that spark, you know, off the bench, and that might kind of clear his head a little bit.
Yeah, I can see the argument for it. It's been really tough to get him going, like, in a consistent manner. Like, where you have just one of your, like, key offensive players. It's like, kind of, like, floundering from the field. Like,
right.
Another game where for his offensive rating was under 100. And, like, his three-point shooting just hasn't been, like, that great since, what, the beginning of the season when it seemed like he made everything. He's, like, really slipped off. Like, 2 for 12 this week, and, like, throw in the Temple or Memphis game. And that's 4 for 15. Not the best.
No, he's been. It's just. I mean, I don't know what it is. I mean, he's a good scoring guard who just isn't scoring. I mean, it's just something is off with him. I don't know if it's mentally or his shot has changed or something, but. Yeah, I don't know. Something's just different about him. But, I mean, at the same time, like we talked about, I mean, he's kind of making up for it defensively. He you know, he's putting the rest of the team in a good position. He had 4 assists against SMU, so he's moving the ball around well. I mean, you just kind of have to hope that his shot just comes back.
Well, I think one of the big parts, like, just looking at his, like, stats from last season, he shot 65% on two-pointers. Like, he would just bully his way to the basket. And
he has
not done that, like, really, as much this season. Like, conference play on two-pointers, he was 28 of 41. Like, 68.3%, which is, like, insane. Like, this year, like, only 13 attempts on twos. And he's, like, 46%. Like, over the year, 43%. So it's like, instead of like those, like, bullying his way to the basket, he's like taking jumpers. Like, he's really settled for a lot this season. And like his jump shot, that just hasn't really been, his jump shot is just not consistent. Because his 3-point percentage is down, and like his 2-point percentage is way down. Like, so he settles a lot, and his shot selection can be like not great.
Right. I think that's the thing, is a shot selection. I mean, one of his two made threes, I don't even know really how to describe it. He kind of double pumped at the top of the key and then just kind of took a half shot, sort of, that just happened to go in. I mean, I think there was about 15, 16 seconds left on the shot clock, and he decided to just chuck up a shot, you know, willy-nilly, and it just happened to go in. I mean, he was 2 of 8 from three. And I don't know, maybe that's it. Maybe it's just the fact that he's just not making the kind of decisions that he was last year with the ball in his hands. I mean, to your point, I mean, he's definitely not bullying his way inside anymore. I mean, that's just not happening. Maybe part of that is the offense is being designed to get fed through Clark and Washington, you know, by way of the pass, instead of having the guards crash as much as they did last season. But, I don't know. It's something's just off there. I'm not really sure what to really make it in a broader sense, but
You do wonder how much of it is his free throw shooting. Like, he just doesn't want to go to the free throw line.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he was 4 of 4 last night, but it's been iffy at best with him this past season. I mean, he's only 58% from the free throw line. Yeah, that's not good for a guard.
That's not good for anybody.
Well, that's why I think it's like all mental, right? Like, free throw shooting is like the most mental, like, aspect of the sport. I mean, it's just basically, basically muscle memory and getting over the fact that you know, all eyes are on you for, you know, 20 seconds while you're shooting the free throws. Maybe it's just something he just is just trying to deal with this year. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, of all the players on the team to break out of it, I mean, Cumberland is the one I'm worried least about. I mean, he'll be fine. He's only a sophomore. He's a good player. He'll be fine down the stretch.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts about this game before we kind of break away and look ahead?
Like, any time you win a blowout where, like, you shoot 41%, 30.8% from three, and 69% from the foul line, it's pretty great. Like, obviously, like, the offense definitely has to start stepping it up and being more consistent for 40 minutes. Because, like, the issue isn't winning games like this. Like, the issue is, like, going far in the tournament. And maybe that's, like, a bad thing to look at. Like, we should just savor each and every performance and worry about the tournament when we get there. But it's, like, hard to not, like, look ahead when we've seen, like, this profile of Cincinnati team, like, flame out early in, like, every single tournament since they made the Sweet 16, like, way back when. It's like, because everybody was really hoping better for this team. And, like, the offense has just really, like, not been as, like, great as we wanted it to be. Like, offensive rating-wise, just in, like, these few league games, like, they're way second behind Wichita State. And like, they're even second on defense, which says a lot about how UCF has really killed some of these teams.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, when we were coming into the year, this was going to be one of the more balanced teams that we were kind of expecting. I mean, for a decade, I mean, the entire team swung towards the side of defense. I mean, the last couple of years we've seen the offense come along, but it was really this season that we were going to have an equally strong offense and defensive team. And, you know, we've seen that for stretches. I mean, the Memphis game is a good example, UCLA to an extent. I mean, every cupcake game pretty much blew it out on both ends of the court. But it's some of these more recent games that we're kind of a little sketchy on. Temple especially, SMU, I mean, they weren't great against Xavier and Florida on either side of the ball. I don't know, it's that inconsistency on the offensive side that's really concerning. I mean, to your point, once you start to get into the tournament time, you gotta be kinda clicking on all cylinders to make a run. And UC's flamed out the last couple of years because they've lost it on one side of the ball or the other. I mean, they looked great against Kansas State last year in the opening round. They pretty much went wire to wire, but then UCLA, they looked fine in the first half and just, you know, couldn't overcome the Lonzo Ball show. I mean, a lot of that is Lonzo Ball, but I mean, just the whole mentality of it on that side of the floor as well. A little discouraging going forward. I mean, you got to hope that, I don't know, you got to hope the offense just kind of comes alive and, you know, especially on a micro level, Jaron Cumberland finds his shot, Kane Broome, you know, figures out his role in the offense, Justin Jennifer continues to progress, Kyle Washington doesn't have games where, you know, he goes completely silent with the ball in his hands and hits, like, you know, 2 of 10 shots or something like that. Yeah, it's, you know, you can always rely on Jacob Evans and Gary Clark, but I mean, you've got to get more out of everybody else. I mean, you don't need everything out of them, but you need more consistency.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, we can like wrap up after this, but like we keep harping on the bench, and like the bench even last night only gives you 10 points. And then we did see like a lot of first half Trevor Moore, which was kind of interesting. But, it's like if they're not going to give you anything, and, like, you have to just rely on your starters to give you all your points, it's going to be really hard when you get a couple of 4-for-13s and 4-for-12s in there.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you deal with issues where, you know, you're getting to foul trouble with ticky-tack calls. I mean, that was the issue against Temple. I mean, you know, Gary Clark and Kyle Washington were getting ticky-tack fouls early in the first half, and they had to turn to Trey Scott and Isaiah Brooks, who are shaky at best down low, and then, you know, you run into the issue where you're clawing your way back at the end of the game and relying on Jacob Evans to make a last-second shot to win the game. I mean, you don't want to have that in the tournament. I mean, tournament games are close, but I mean, you don't want... that's not ideal. That's not ideal, not for this team.
Especially, like, as you mentioned kind of earlier, like, they're being big forecast as, like, a six seed right now. It's like, if you're, like, would you even say 3, 4, 5, 6, like, chances are you're going to be playing a solid team, if, like, not, but flaw, a slightly flawed team in the second round. It's like, it's, like, important to get this stuff straightened out and finish the year as the best you can. And, like, they have... like, kind of a light schedule until, like, the end of the month when, like, Houston pops up.
Right.
And then in February they go to Moody and Houston and then play Wichita. Like, it seems like the big three game, well, count UCF at home. Like, that's a huge, like, four-game stretch in the beginning of February. It seems like after this game at UCF, it seems like the next time they'll really be challenged.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's it. I mean, it really ramps up there starting like mid-February. You could say like the end of this month. I mean, depending on how Houston does between then and now, I mean, yeah, it really starts to ramp up quickly. I don't know. I mean, good news. Defense is going to travel. Offense, they've got to figure something out. I don't know. They just have to play better. And I'm not a coach, so I can't really dive into exactly how they need to do that.
Yeah, it would help if they didn't turn the ball over so much.
Oh, yeah, that would help a little bit. Just a little bit.
SMU had 15 points off of turnovers, and they only scored 56 points.
Right. Yeah, that's a bit bad. Anything else from this game that you want to take away to the rest of the season?
No, I think I'm good on that one.
Yeah. All right, looking ahead, so UC plays, they play South Florida on Saturday. So, yeah, the next game that UC plays is Central Florida on the 16th. So that's going to be a tough game, right, Scott?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. Because like what we know about Central Florida is they play a really great defense. Is they have a giant man in the middle of their defense that they funnel everything towards. And
yep, they're cheating inside. That's not. I mean, people are not supposed to be 7'6". So that's UCS automatically cheating. Asterisk on this game.
Because they held East Carolina and Temple to both like 39 points, which is kind of crazy. Even, like, losing to SMU. SMU and Memphis each scored 56 against them. It's like, they're just, like, locking people down in league play.
Oh, yeah. Like Central Florida is, like, the new South Florida. Or what Rutgers was a while ago, where they basically, they just played that really slow-paced, offense, and just ground other teams into the dust and then just won a close game at the end. I mean, they technically blew out Temple 61-39, but I mean, to your point, that says more about Temple and how awful they are than anything. But I mean, a lot of their game, I mean, their defense is just stunning this year. Yeah, and it's 100% because of Taco Fall. It is 100% because of that. So, I don't know. UC was okay against them last year. I mean, going back, I'm gonna go look back at the schedule. Fill in the dead air time.
But UC lost to them at UCF last year. And I believe the game in Cincinnati was pretty tight too.
Right. Yeah. It was. It was 60-50 at home, and they lost 59-49 on the road. So, yeah, it's pretty much like the same old, same old.
Although UCF is a little bit different without B.J. Taylor in their lineup. It's like they just pretty much like bomb threes, and they have a giant man.
Right.
And like they don't give up points. It's like they're kind of like easy to figure out, but like then they're also really hard to figure out because like how do you score around Taco Fall? It's like almost impossible.
Yeah, what's odd is that like on the road, Taco Fall had a much better game against Cincinnati than when UC went to Central Florida. I mean, he was 7-7 from the field because he pretty much just dropped the ball up from the ceiling into the hoop because he's the only person on the planet that can do that. Double double with 11 boards and 14 points. But then when UC went on the road, it was a BJ Taylor show. I mean, Taco Fall was only 2-2 from the field. He had eight rebounds, 7 total points, 4 blocks. But BJ Taylor had 27 points. So I mean, it seems like UC has, or I guess the staff has the game plan to plan around Taco Fall. I mean, obviously your game plan isn't, feed the post and hope that Gary Clark and Kyle Washington can out-athletic him because he's just so tall. But I mean, it seems like the staff essentially has the game plan to contain Taco Fall. You just have to hope that BJ Taylor doesn't come back between, now and next Tuesday.
Yeah, like we, just from quick research, it sounds like he's working his way back. So
Right, he is.
there's a decent chance he could play against UC.
Like if he's not, yeah. Like if he's not back this week, he's going to be back on the return trip. Oh, I'm sorry, not this week, next week.
Like neither one of those games last year, UC averaged a point per possession, and like the game at UCF was really tough. Like Evans was the only guy who scored consistently. Like
Right.
Kyle Washington had a miserable game. So it's gonna be like interesting to see like where this team like tries to get their points from. Because you're gonna have to like settle for jumpers. And like that hasn't really been this team's forte.
Right.
So it's gonna be
Right.
an interesting game against the Knights.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, they haven't been driving from the outside. I mean, at least Cumberland hasn't, as much as they were last year. I mean, that's one of the keys of the game to get Taco Fall into foul trouble. Which, unfortunately, Taco Fall doesn't really seem to get into foul trouble. I mean, I don't know. It's one of those games where you just have to basically focus on the one guy. And if Taco Fall doesn't have a double double, UC has a pretty good chance. But UC almost has to treat this game almost like Temple all over again. Like you have to assume you're going to get blocked out in the paint. You have to assume you're probably going to get turnovers, in which case Taco Fall is going to be picking up a lot of those. And you just have to figure out a way to take him out of the game. Which, encouraging enough, UC seems to be been able to do that the last couple of years. I mean, like you said, UC lost on the road, but they only lost by 4 points, and it was because BJ Taylor put up 27 on them. So, I don't know. I like their chances. I think that I don't know, until this team loses a conference game, I like their chances in the conference.
But we should definitely like their chances. Like we should like that. They should be
Oh,
UCF.
yeah. Let's not say. I mean, this isn't like UC's going to like Wichita State or something. I mean, but Taco Fall is a problem and is a game changer. Like for most teams, yeah.
Well, their entire defense. Like they play like really solid team defense, just like UC does. So that's gonna be a struggle. Like the offense is gonna have to bring it, or it's gonna be a game like the performance at Temple. Where like, they really have to struggle and fight it out because Central Florida's not going to push tempo. Like
Right.
they're going to slow it down and make you have to go against them. Like, they're one of the slowest teams with the ball in like the entire country. So it's not going to be that pretty. And like their offense really isn't that great.
Yeah, it's probably gonna be one of those games, and I mean we're not gonna record a podcast between now and then, so I mean it's gonna be one of those games where it's probably gonna end up like similar to Temple, like 50s or 60s. I mean it's gonna look ugly offensively. I guess we just gotta hope there's not gonna be any kind of major injuries and UC doesn't shoot 30% from the field and I don't know. I'm assuming this is gonna be ugly. I'm not gonna be like looking at this game and saying, oh, the offense is terrible, it's gonna be terrible all year because they either won, 55-50 over Central Florida on the road or lost 55-50 or something like that. Central Florida is just one of those weird, they're just one of those weird teams you just kind of have to deal with every year.
Yeah, definitely. Like, Johnny Dawkins has done a pretty nice job at turning them around. It's like the, you know, they're going to play hard. Like, their offense isn't going to be great. It's like, you're just going to have to keep chopping at it and, like, find a way to break their defense.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be one of those low-scoring defensive games. I mean, if Kyle Washington or Gary Clark can get any kind of foul trouble, it's going to be really worrisome. Because, I mean, Taco Fall is going to eat, you know, Nysiah Brooks alive. Like, we say that, you know, the game plan probably shouldn't be to go through Gary Clark and Kyle Washington like they normally do, just because you have to be extremely aware of what Taco Fall is going to bring defensively. But, I mean, it's got to go through it somewhat. And if those guys are completely out and they're not, you know, getting the ball down low and they're not, you know, working their way inside, I don't have any confidence in Trey Scott and Nysiah Brooks to do the same thing. I mean, Taco Fall is just going to eat them for breakfast.
Yeah, definitely. It's a game where, like, you really need your guards to play well.
Right. So, I don't know. Do you have predictions for that game? I mean, I'm kind of thinking, like, I mean, it's going to be ugly. People are going to be bitching on Twitter. It's going to be one of those games where, you know, people are going to be complaining that UC's running the old Mick Cronin offense. You know, why don't they run more? Why don't they get more possessions? Why don't they play faster, et cetera? But it's probably going to be like a 62-57 UC win, something like that.
Yeah, it'll probably be pretty low scoring. And something really low possession.
Right.
But UC should win that type of game. And if they don't, if like they lose that game, like they're probably not going to win the league.
Yeah.
Well, they could still win the league, but they just make it a little bit harder on themselves.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the league title goes through UC and Wichita. That's just a fact. So yeah, if they lose this game, I mean, it probably doesn't have a huge bearing on what they're going to do against Wichita State, but it might be kind of telling.
Like, yeah, because you'd have to definitely sweep them to win the outright league title.
Right.
Assuming they didn't lose any other game.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know. Any other thoughts from kind of like the upcoming games or the season itself before we, you know, kind of wrap up?
Nothing too much on USF. They're really bad. That one was worth skipping.
Yeah, that was like, you know, yeah, I think they score like in the 30s a few times this year. They are awful.
And they just got like run out by Wichita yesterday.
Yeah.
So like, unless like UC plays like their worst game ever, they should beat that easily.
Yeah.
That'd be a game to watch to see how well the offense performs, because they should bounce back.
That's true. That is a good point. I mean, like, is it, yeah, that's one where we can kind of answer the question, you know, is the offense, you know, taking a downturn, you know, they're just not playing well overall, or is it just Temple and SMU got them out of sorts? So, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, it's a road game. So it's just,
yeah.
See if they can bring it on the road, which they should be able to.
Right.
Like, just throughout this week, it's kind of like a down week for the league, because like, Wichita plays East Carolina. Because UCF plays at UConn, which could be interesting. Tulsa plays at Houston. Like, and like, that's about it for all the interesting games. SMU plays Temple, which will be like an interesting game to see how they bounce back. Both of them, I guess, since Temple's been like god awful in league play.
Right.
But, yeah, that doesn't look like the most interesting week in the league. I guess besides if Tulsa goes out and loses at Houston and falls back down to earth after losing at Memphis over the weekend.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one because it seems like Tulsa's kind of taking Temple's spot as that potential, you know, fourth or fifth. Like Temple's out of it. If Temple loses a couple more conference games in the manner that they're doing, they're completely out of the NCAA tournament. Like they're, I would say they're like sort of on the cusp now, but I mean, losing the way they did, like what was it on? I think it was a Sunday or Monday or Saturday over the weekend.
Well, they're 7-8 now. Like, I don't think they're on the cusp of like anything.
Well, that's the thing is like, I never count out Fran Dunphy. I just don't. But I mean, they're basically they've got to make some kind of miracle run out of them.
If they lose that SMU, they'll be 0-5 in the league.
Right.
That'll be pretty bad.
All right, that's a good point. All right, we'll count Temple out.
Except their only hope already is like winning the conference tournament.
Right.
Which they probably won't do.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, that Tulsa game is going to be kind of interesting because, I mean, you got to – it's, you know, UC and Wichita State for the two spots. SMU is kind of – I mean, they've got the third now, but they're kind of clinging to it. Houston could take that spot potentially. But, yeah, it seems like it's like, you know, UC Wichita State, you know, flip-flopping 1-2, and then and then it's like Houston, SMU, and Tulsa kind of battling for that 3-5 spot, potentially.
Don't leave out UCF. I think UCF is almost...
UCF, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
I think UCF is definitely better than Tulsa.
Yeah, I think so. It's just that, like, UCF's in a situation without B.J. Taylor, all another team has to do is take Taco Fall out of the game, and... they have a good chance of winning. The problem is it's like nearly impossible to take a 7'6" guy out of the game.
Their schedule hasn't been like that tough, but they've only lost one game since December.
Right.
That was at SMU, like one of the hardest places to win in the league.
Right. So, yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. It is kind of disappointing just in an overall sense. Like, cause we thought this could definitely be a 4 or 5 bid league at the max. And now it's like looking like SMU doesn't look great. Like neither Memphis or UConn like bounced back at all. Like Temple's been a pretty much all out disappointment since they beat like Wisconsin.
Yeah,
who also ended up being an all out disappointment. Like Houston, like just doesn't have anything like interesting on like their resume besides beating Arkansas. And like UCF is flawed, and like Houston really is flawed, and like nobody else really stands out. Just kind of disappointing, but a lot of those teams are good at home. It's like that makes some of these road games interesting. Like you see, going to UCF is an interesting battle. Like going to Wichita is definitely going to be tough. Going to Houston, it seems like it's always been tough. And going to SMU is tough for everybody because no matter how good or bad they are, that's a really impossible place to win. And they're number two in a home court winning streak behind UC, who still counts because they haven't lost at home yet.
Like we talked about last week, you always count it until they lose.
And then it doesn't count because they're playing at Northern Kentucky's arena.
Exactly. They're not playing in Cincinnati. They're not even playing in the same state. So it doesn't even count until they actually lose. Or it counts until they lose, sorry.
Yeah, it counts until they lose in Cincinnati.
So. All right, Scott, anything else before we kind of wrap this up with some national championship picks?
Now let's head to the picks. I wasn't looking forward to this game at all until, over the weekend. Then I started getting kind of pumped for it once everybody started kicking in the coverage.
Oh yeah, you've been watching ESPN, so perfect. So they've done their job.
And like all the other like blogs and stuff, like started sending their writers there. like they've been writing it up. So it made me at least pay more attention to it. I just hope Alabama doesn't win. That's my only hope.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm kind of rooting for Georgia. I mean, just because I like Kirby Smart, and, you know, it'd be kind of neat to see Georgia win the national title, you know, especially because you don't want to see Alabama, you know, continue just to fan the flames of the dynasty. But I'm kind of worried that we're going to get, like, the LSU-Alabama national title where it was, like, what, 13-9? Like, just the most boring national title game. But at the same time, I'm kind of curious if it's going to actually just end up being a shootout. Like, Kirby Smart and Nick's defense is completely collapsed, and they each give up like 50 points. Which you can totally see. I mean, like Georgia has like two NFL draft picks at running back. Their quarterback, who knows if he's going to even stick around at Georgia if Jacob Eason comes back, but he's looking really, really good. Alabama has obviously playmakers all over the field, even offensively. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of curious what happens. I just hope it's not one of those low-scoring slogs of a game.
If that Bills-Jaguars playoff game was was enough like bad football to last us the rest of 2018.
Yeah, that was, yeah, we don't need more of that.
I hope it's, like, just an interesting game. Like, their SEC title game a couple years ago was pretty interesting.
That's true. It'll probably end up being somewhere in like the 20s or 30s. I mean, for each team. So like I'm picking just because I want Georgia to win. I'm going to say like 27-24.
I'll go 24-21 Georgia.
Okay.
Just cuz I want them to win as well.
Right.
I don't want it to be Alabama. How do you watch the game? Do you watch it on just regular ESPN? Do you watch any of the other coverage that they do?
I really like the coach's room. I think it's really interesting, but the problem is I find myself listening to the coaches more than watching the game, and I kind of want to watch the game, you know? The coaches are really interesting. Like, I mean, you never really truly understand how intelligent how intelligent these guys are. But until you actually kind of watch them breaking down live film of a game. Like I never had more respect for Matt Rhule than last year's national championship game. I mean, just the way he thinks about things, and you know, he's explaining the reason why you know a guy went this way versus this way, or the coverage leaned this way versus this way. It was just interesting to see. And these are guys who you know they probably looked at the games, they probably know the teams very well, but they haven't gone through the game tape, and they're basically just dissecting the teams live. It's just so interesting to watch that kind of aspect of it. At the same time, I'm like, I'm a fan of football. I just want to kind of watch the game. You know, I don't really need the commentary. I mean, of course, you get the announcer and the color analyst, but like, I can see how kind of the coach's room can be kind of distracting. How do you typically watch it?
I watch it like just live on ESPN, but I do flip around to the coach's room. I have the same problem of where like I can't really focus on the game. Especially because they stop and, like, rewind stuff, and, like, you kind of miss things that happen live.
Yeah.
Or, like, you just, like, sit and watch them watch the game instead of watching the little box at the top. But sometimes...
I would watch the game live... Oh, go ahead.
Like, I've done before, like, I watched the game, and then, like, I watched the coach's thing, like, later, like, off my DVR.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to try to do this time. I think I'm going to try to do that.
Although, like, if the game sucks, like, you end up watching, like, a shitty game, like, twice.
Right.
Like, last year, I did it with a game, and it was pretty fun, because, like, that was a great game. And, like you said, like, they break down stuff, like, so quick. It's, like, kind of crazy, like, how they even see some of this stuff. Like, and obviously, like, they're in it every day, and, like, they know the coaches. But like, they just, like, see things happening, like, so fast, before they even happen. Especially like Dino, like Dino Babers and Gary Patterson, I think are the best two at that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm actually surprised they brought like Brett Bielema last time. So it was that was a little surprise, but I mean he actually seemed like he knew his stuff, which was even more surprising. So, but yeah. So yeah, it should be a good game. I'm kind of hoping it's kind of like more interesting to your point, and you know we don't get LSU Alabama like we did a few years ago because that was something not worth watching.
Definitely not. It's like the last college football game until September, or I guess until August. So
Right.
it's a long wait. So this game has to be worth it. It's got a standard to live up to.
Exactly. Exactly. So.
Yeah. But all the preseason top 25 polls, I guess like the unofficial ones, are going to come out as soon as the game ends. Does UC end up ranked on any of them?
Zero. Zero chance. Zero chance. Oh, God. Well, we got a couple more years for that, right? Yeah, and as we kind of wrap this up, we probably won't be, this is probably going to be pretty much a basketball-focused podcast, like, through the rest of the regular season. I don't know if there's going to be any surprises, like, going on National Signing Day, like, a few guys, but we might talk about that. But this is pretty much going to be, like, basketball here on out.
Here's one question. Like, do you think any AAC team is going to be ranked on any of like the way too early top 25s?
I could see.
I'm gonna guess
Go ahead.
no. I don't think any of like
Really?
either Florida team gets ranked.
I'm gonna say Memphis. I think Memphis will get ranked.
I don't guess Riley Ferguson's leaving. I don't think they'll get ranked.
I think because of the head coaching situation, I think that having Norvell there still, I think that's gonna weigh a lot. I think Memphis will be ranked. Central Florida, South Florida might have a chance. I think Memphis will be ranked. I think Central and South Florida will get votes, though.
I don't know about Central Florida like being actually being ranked. Maybe like they'll get like a gift spot like late in the poll. It's
Right.
like Mackenzie Milton comes back, right? So it's like they'll get some respect, but it's like they lose a lot of their defense. And they lose Scott
Right.
Frost. I don't know.
Yeah. They might, yeah, I think you're right. They're gonna get some kind of like sympathy vote, sort of.
But see, it's South Florida. I don't even think has a chance without Quentin Flowers. Those people just like believe in Charlie Strong.
Right.
Now I
I
changed
don't
my
know.
mind. Like Central Florida is going to be ranked,
Okay.
but they'll be at the bottom. They'll be like in the 20s.
Oh yeah. Well, if there's anything we learned about the rankings is that they're incredibly biased towards the group of five, so. That's something to look forward to.
Just, some things never change.
Exactly. So, anything else you got, Scott, before we wrap this up?
Nope. I don't have anything else to add. What about you?
Nope, I'm good. Here's something for a good entertaining national championship tonight as we wrap up college football, and we will talk to you guys next week. Go Bearcats!